You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Every Monday from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. you can listen to our Modulism radio show. Airing electro meet acoustic music, championing the use of analog instruments. The use of electricity to sustain a sound produced with a musical intent. Each program lasts 1 hour and is especially dedicated to one composer.
Did you know that Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM has its own app? The Wave Farm Radio app, available for both iOS and Android, allows users to listen to live audio from any of the Wave Farm web streams, including WGXC 90.7 FM, Standing Wave Radio, the installations in the Wave Farm Art Park, and other partner streams. And you can also find us on the Bloomberg Connects app, where you can explore the Wave Farm Art Park installations and the Pomotsitok Wak Kulistok, an indigenous sound walk. Plan your visit and learn more about what Wave Farm has to offer at wavefarm.org.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of India, of New York, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
We feel that the problem, number one, of the black man in America is beyond America's ability to solve. It's a human problem, not an American problem or a Negro problem. And as a human problem or a world problem, we feel that it should be taken out of the jurisdiction of the United States government and the United States courts and taken into the United Nations in the same manner that the problems of the black man in South Africa, Angola, and other parts of the world, and even the way they're trying to bring the problems of the Jews in Russia into the United Nations because of violation of human rights. We believe that our problem is one not of violation of civil rights, but a violation of human rights. Not only are we denied the right to be a citizen in the United States, we're denied the right to be a human being.
Good evening, my friends, family, and community at large. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Irwin, host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, a wavefarm.org enterprise, where every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. Why talk about race and ethnicity? The answer is to combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. So now let's start talking here, where
no topic is taboo.
And today we have in the studio myself and Garrett Roche, and you know his talk platform, the Roche Solid Truths, which is where he speaks about positivity in its purest form. So it's a great blessing to have him in the studio, since our guest talker today is actually Lakia Walker, which is a taped conversation. And we're going to do our best to get all of the conversation that we have edited, basically for clarity's sake. But still, we had a lot of fun. We made the conversation in my own home, so we were very comfortable and laid back. So I do hope that the hard cuts aren't so terrible that it's hard to understand. But again, we have Garrett here on hand, who's really good with the having us have the best volume of the music and the other audio that we have going.
Thank you, Kimberly. Always an honor. We got this.
Yay. So before I introduce the first of the three segments that we have for with our guest, Lakia Walker, again, I'm going to just share with you a little bit about what you just heard. You heard from the one and only Malcolm X. And Malcolm X, as everyone would be keen to be aware of, was one of two civil rights leaders at the time that people in the media specifically and in government kind of put together to say how one was on a different side of the realm of civil rights as the other. And of course, the other I'm talking about, Martin Luther King Jr. And with Martin Luther King Jr., we have a month of celebration for his birthday in January, and a lot of applause and aplomb for him. And yet for Malcolm X, for those people who really supported him and followed him, would say he didn't pretty much get his just desserts. So I just definitely want to mention his birthday being May 19th, and that this would mark the 100th year anniversary of his being born. So I wanted to get that out. And we just found something really quick on YouTube. So for sure, YouTube has many of the best audios for people who, you know, are no longer with us. So I encourage people to do their own YouTube search for more relevant to your general position on what civil rights means to you. But we do have several quotes from Malcolm X, and later in the show, when we have a break, I'm going to play, I don't know if it's playing a game, but to ask Garrett if he knows whether it's a Malcolm X quote or if it's somebody else who is quoting it. I'm going to see if he's aware. And of course, I'm expecting you to follow along with us. And if there's anyone who can call in because you already know the number, do so. But you can also call Garrett or myself. If you're friends and fans of ours, you already have our numbers. That'll work that way too.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess what we should do first then is play the first segment with our guest, Lakia Walker. Let me just... So I should also say we're going to talk a little bit about Mother's Day, which is why I have Lakia on, because she is, in my opinion, mother extraordinaire. We're also going to mention a little bit about mental health, since this is Mental Health Month. And it's really important to be caring and kind and considerate, not to just other people, but to yourself. So mental health is something to adhere to and acknowledge. Of course, it's Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month also. So to honor this segment of our population, this wonderful ethnicity group, we will have a song by a member of that ethnic group. I believe he's Korean American. So we're going to have, what's his name? David Choi to, and I'll reintroduce him, but he's a young Korean-American singer, and I think it's something relevant that we talk about the youth, since we're going to have Lakia Walker talk about her children, that we have a young person in our show with. And I did mention that if you looked at the website and follow along with what was going to be discussed today, you'd also find that language is going to be discussed. I don't think we're going to speak too much about language other than what Malcolm X says, because next month we have a guest who is Mike Green. He's a cultural economist, and I won't tell you what that is. You're going to have to listen next month to find out what a cultural economist is. But we're going to talk a lot about the words, especially the acronyms like DEI, and how DEI got turned into a dirty word, so to speak. So, again, I just wanted to bring that up, but we might not get into the depths of that because next month we're going to have that great guest. Also, this month is Small Business Month. So, yeah. So I wanted to give a shout out to all small business owners. And I actually was going to also have on this show a person of interest. She is an amazing LinkedIn connector. And Erica Brates, who is a digital transformation strategist, another terminology that, you know, we're learning all about what people can do and call themselves now in this new digital age.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll have her tell us how she spent Small Business Month next month, too. So a lot going on next month, a lot going on this month with, again, my guest, Lakia Walker, whose three-part segmented conversation we will start right now.
Hi, this is Kimberly Irwin, and I'm here with my cousin, Lakia Walker. We call her Kia. Kia, welcome to Race Talks.
Hi, everyone.
Well, this is a taped conversation. I like to keep it real, but I wanted to ask you, since it's Mother's Day, well, it's not Mother's Day. It's about mothers, though, so I want to wish you a belated Happy Mother's Day, and you are a mom of four.
Yes.
Not so young children anymore. One is graduating this year.
Yes.
One graduated, what, 1 year ago? Or two years ago?
3 years ago.
No way! It was 3 years ago he graduated?
Well, two and a half, yeah. Because he only did 3 semesters at Compuering, so yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow, okay. So, we're going to take this in a few segments. So, the first segment is you being a parent with four young, well, not, again, relatively young children. You have two that are still in school, though.
Yes.
What are their ages?
13 and 15.
Okay, so they are keeping you busy.
Absolutely.
You're like a soccer mom?
I am. I'm a balanced mom.
Explain that. Because most moms would not say that. They're going, ah!
No, it gets like that, but when you have, like, four kids, and they play sports and they're active, you have to kind of like balance your time out. So, of course, my husband, he tries to go to every single game. I'm the home game mom.
Oh, okay.
So I usually don't travel with the team when they go away to away games. So when there's a home game, I'm there for sure. And if it's close enough and I don't have anything else to do, I'll go to an away game. But most of the time, I do not go to away games, and my kids have always understood that, and they've known that since they played sports.
And you have a very big extended family.
Yes.
So you have a lot of support. But I was noticing your children are really beautifully well behaved. And I don't want to say that there's a stigma attached to black kids, because, you know, like the Bang Bang children, or was it Bang Bang children?
Bang Bang kids.
Bang Bang kids.
Yes.
But one thing I know about, one of the things that we say with, as black children or with parents, is like, you know, our parents don't play that.
Right.
You know, my mother used to say, I brought you into this world and I take you out.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you keep that? How do you have beautiful children? What do you do?
Well, thank you very much, first of all. One is I am also a praying mom. So first and foremost, I pray for my children all the time. Oh. I pray for their safety. I pray for their protection. I pray for God to direct them, that he takes, you know, I know they're going to be facing temptation, that they make the right decisions. I pray for wisdom. So I believe first and foremost that it's because of prayer that I feel like I am a blessed mother, and my, you know, they're not perfect. They still do.
And, well, they're human.
Right.
They make God mistakes, for that.
Right. And they, you know, they still do, like, they do stuff. But, you know, I believe that that's true. And then the other thing is I spanked my kids when they were small.
I was going to ask you about that because, you know, you can go to jail now for spanking your kids or whatever.
Yes. So when my kids were younger, they got spankings. And I felt like if I spanked them while they were young, I wouldn't have to spank them or just, you know,
hurt them badly.
Right. When they got older.
Take them out like your mom said.
That's my second thing that I believe, like, kind of worked, because they've always been respectful, and they know, like, if I say something, then it's going to happen. So if I don't do, like, empty threats, if I said that I was going to spank you, I was going to spank you.
So you followed through.
Yes. So and
strong in that way.
I also, if I said that you're not going to have, I don't know, you're not going to be able to, if you're grounded or whatever, and you're going to be grounded for 2 or 3 days or whatever, you were grounded for 2 or 3 days. You're not going to have the TV or whatever. It's, I did it.
Okay.
So.
But you are, like you said, you have you're married.
Yes.
So you have a husband in the home.
Yes. Yes, I do.
And I say that because I grew up with a mom. I don't know if you're even allowed to say single mother, but with a single parent.
Yes.
And she did a good job. I'm patting myself on the back, of course. But it was a struggle, she said, for herself because, you know, I didn't have my father in the home. And I wasn't a father's girl, you know, child daddy's girl or anything like that. So I didn't feel neglected in that way. But I would imagine some children would feel that way. Do you feel also that there's a blessing that your children have both you and your husband, their father, in the home?
Absolutely. I do feel that way. And I didn't, it's funny that you said that because me too, growing up, I grew up with my mother. And my father was in my life. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't
that
in the home.
Yeah.
He wasn't in the home. And so I just, when I got, you know, when we started having kids and I see the way that my husband, he handles them a lot different than I do.
Oh.
And it's different.
And well, it was something that a little bit. What's the
well,
difference?
It's like, well, when the they were younger, it's not even like that. He's different. And he just, when they were younger, like, for me, even though, like, I did probably most of the disciplining, I was with them more. He worked a lot when they were younger. And so I was, you know, more, I was with them. But they would, if I told them to do something, I would have to tell them multiple times. Mm. Whereas if he says it one time, that's it. Everybody listens.
Was it his voice, his timbre, his demeanor?
No, I don't know what it was. It was just...
Was he not in the home, so they wanted to please him more or something?
I honestly, I don't know. And it's so crazy, too, because we got a dog, and even the dog listens to him more. So I don't know if it's just, like, a man thing, the man voice. He does my, you know my husband, he's not, like, really...
Like, no, he seems like
he's so gentle, very gentle.
Yes,
but you could
barely hear him sometimes. You have to like lean in to hear.
Yeah, but if like they're jumping off the couch, he'd be like, "All right, everybody sit down. That's it. Everybody sits down." And I'm like, "Everybody sit down."
Maybe that's it though. You're like, ah! and they like that. They're like, "She crazy." But that, you know, sometimes it's the soft voice.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like, you know, it's the person who doesn't have that demeanor. Like, if you're a very nice, quiet person, people think you're good. But then that could be the person who goes crazy and runs around. And it's the crazy person out there doing, that you think, oh, she's bad. And she's the one that, you know, is tame and mundane, kind of.
Yeah.
So maybe that was it.
But I don't know. But he had a different way with, and he still, to this day, like, you know, if he says something, if he's either correcting them or even just having like a serious conversation, they respond to him more different than they do to me.
Well, like I said, it's different than how I grew up, and it's like you said, it's different than how you grew up. Do your children feel like they've got the best world by having you both there, or do sometimes they secretly wish that one of you? No, I'm just joking.
No, I know, because they have a lot of friends that don't have both parents in the house, so I don't think they really appreciate it really until they got older.
Oh, okay.
You know, they have, you know, friends that, you know, they got to go to their dad's house on this weekend, and, you know, and back and forth. They have friends that, you know, don't have their dad at all. So I think, I mean, even Mariah.
That's your oldest daughter.
That's my oldest daughter. She's 17. She recently has said, because, you know, she's in the age of, like, you know, dating. She goes out or whatever. And, you know, and she had said to one, she had a problem with one of the guys, not a problem, but he wasn't treating her the way that she should be treated. And one day she just came home and she made us think about it. And then she was just like, I have a dad. Like, my dad, like, I don't have to, like, buy dinner. My dad always bought me dinner. So I'm not, like, dating someone who's not going to buy me dinner.
Right.
Like, and I thought that was big at 17 years old that she's realizing that.
Yeah.
So, I don't think they really appreciate it until, like, now that they're getting a little older. But when they were younger, they could care less.
And I actually know her from being in school. And she wasn't a quiet child in the classroom. So she's her vocal ability. Sometimes girls are vocal with each other.
Yeah.
But they're silent when there's that other, you know, male around that they're interested in. But having her not, you know, still be as vocal,
yeah,
that's very wonderful. So she attributes that to having that father figure
right
in the home. Awesome. Now, let's do the second segment.
Okay, well, we're going to do the second segment in a few minutes. I just wanted to give a shout out again for Mother's Day. This was my first year of remembering my mother's actual date where she passed away. People had asked me before and I could never remember, but I had to do something to find her death certificate, Garrett, and I looked at it. I actually went and paid for it and got it, and it became real to me. And my mother is, I'm now older than my mom was when she passed away. So that also is a really interesting dynamic for me. And having listened to Kia, again, she's my cousin, so I'm just going to call her Kia, not La Kia, but listening to Kia and having her talk about her children was joyful for me. And again, like I said, noting now that I could actually look at my mother's date of passing and keep the awareness and not feel totally sad about it, because I know, you know, for new children to be born, people have to pass away. And I did have several decades of good times with my mom. But I want you to talk about your mom, because you talked to me on the way coming here about why this is special for you.
Well, that is all astounding, Kimberly. Thank you for sharing all of that with us about your mom and your cousin and your success there with your mom's death certificate. And that is very encouraging to hear, and I'm sure for the listeners as well. And thank you for allowing me to share. This is just incredible how sometimes things align in this world, because this date today, May 20th, the third Tuesday of the month, besides being Race Talks, just happens to be the anniversary date of my mother's passing, which was May 20th, 2015. And ironically, that was also her mother, my grandmother's birthday.
So you remember this date?
Full force, I do.
Wow.
Thank you so much. And my mother, I mean, I just have to say, she was far too good for this earth. She had like a sixth sense and another dimension about her, just to put it very briefly.
Well, I'm going to shout out my mom's name, Patricia Ann Irwin, and many people who meet me and who know her, they would say, oh, you're Patty's daughter. And I remember her saying,
I'm Patricia, not Patty. But, you know, because people change as they get older. And some of that information you will be hearing, some feedback about my family life would you be hearing in the conversation in segment two with Kia Walker. But before we go, shout out your mom's name.
Thank you very much. Yes, Margaret or Maggie, as she went by most of the time.
And like I said, if you guys are wanting to shout out your parent, your mom's name, and you know us, give us a call. Hey, let's get into segment two. Oh, wait, before we do, let me just share with you where we're going with segment two, because I did something very interesting. I'm trying to get ready for my next month's guest, who is very big on AI. So what I decided to do was to have AI. I threw some information in, and I wanted AI to provide what the conversation was going to be about. So I thought this would be a really great way of introducing the segment by reading what it came, what it said. Let's see. So this conversation moves beyond American borders. Lakia shares transformative experiences taking her children to Africa, giving them a firsthand perspective on gratitude, global poverty, and resilience. From discussions about racial identity and preparing Black children for the realities of America to embracing cultural heritage and nurturing strong values, this episode and the next one, like I said, we're breaking them up into three, delivers wisdom, warmth, and we giggle a lot. So plenty of humor. I tried to cut some of that out, Garrett, I told you, right? But
well, it's down to earth, warm, homey, and mothery.
So whether you're a parent, educator, or someone invested in the well-being and future of our communities, settle in for these next episodes because they're filled with honesty, hopefully inspiration, and the kind of family storytelling that just keeps it real.
Okay. This is called Race Talks, where we talk about race and ethnicity. And it's not a big deal so much that a Black family is, together, you know, like, you know, you have a, in your case, you a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, you have the four kids, and not the two kids, but four kids, and the dog.
Yes.
So it's like you're a traditional nuclear family.
Right.
Which when you, on average, when people think black families, we don't tend to view that the Black family like that. And we've expressed why, because like you and I, we both grew up a little bit differently in that regard. Still came out wonderfully well. We had good moms.
Yes.
And pretty good fathers.
Yes.
In also in a sense, at least as they grew up. Mine took a while. Loved him. Dad up in heaven. Okay.
When I was growing up, I think we had the biggest class that had the most Black people in it. So I think...
What, three?
It was like 10 or something.
Okay. Well,
which is pretty big. So there was like, I think I graduated with like 121 students, and I think there was like 10 Black people.
So that was like America, 14%.
Which was big for Catskill. Yeah. Like it wasn't, I don't know what it is now, but it wasn't... Before, classes usually had like 5. So we thought we were like top notch because we had like 10. So I think I've never really had race issues. Though I grew up with a lot of white people, I don't know, for me, I just was never really faced with racial issues while being in school. Or like even being an adult. So, but I don't think my husband had the same experience. I remember one time we got pulled over, together before we had kids. We were in Massachusetts actually. And I was a college student and I just happened to be taking like a law class. So I was like learning the law and this cop had like pulled us over and had asked me, I wasn't the driver, and he had asked me for my ID, and I was like,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I was like, I don't have to give you my ID.
No, you didn't.
I am not the driver. Why are you asking for my ID? And I'm like, I didn't do anything. And so, like, I was kind of going back and forth with him, and Larry, he was just like, babe, be quiet, you know? And I'm like, no, this is like, what is he doing, you know? And I'm like, going on. Well, he had us pulled over for like 30 minutes. And so in that meantime, Larry is saying to me, like, you can't be talking like that. You can't. And so that was like my first experience of like, what the heck? What are you talking about? Like, this is America. Why can't we just, he's in the wrong. Like, I'm, you know, I'm right. You know, I just took a law class. So, yeah. So that I saw for the first time, I think back then, of how he was treated differently because him being a black male. And then I don't know, maybe, well, and I had never experienced that before.
Let me ask you, because sometimes there's class differences. Now, did you grow up like being middle class or working class, or what was your level of interaction maybe with the white people in your environment?
I guess I would be considered middle class.
Those issues with the law enforcement or anything like that.
So, and raising my kids, we talk about issues, so I make them aware, but I don't want to make them afraid. I don't want them to feel like they can't be successful because of their race. So I always tell my kids, the world is yours. Like, you change the environment. That's the message that I bring to them. I don't want them to ever think that because they're either a female or, well, my daughters, or because you're a black male in America or whatever. And I'm not dismissing the things that people go through. I'm not, you know, but at the same time,
you've experienced this, so you know, right, it exists.
It definitely exists. So I bring them an awareness to make them like, listen, this could happen or whatever, and be aware. And, but I don't make it like, this is something that you're going to have to go through and learn how to overcome and it be a struggle in your life and you become a victim of the American racism system. Right. I don't teach that. I tell them that they can do whatever they want to do.
And do you teach them overtly about African heritage or African American culture?
I have to just be open about my ignorance. I don't myself know a lot about the black culture. Because I no one ever really taught me. I just relied on whatever we learned in school. So no, I don't really teach them about the black culture, but what my goal for my kids is, I feel like, before any of them graduate from high school, I want to take them out of America to another country.
And you did that.
And I've done that with two so far.
Okay. So
yes.
I wanted to have one segment where we talked about your experience in Africa. So okay. This is a good time.
Okay. So yeah. So I feel like
Well, we're going to just go over to the next third segment where she talks about traveling to Africa. Like I said, we want to make sure there are three succinct, or I should say distinct segments. This is from the autobiography of Malcolm X, and I chose this particular statement of Malcolm's because of what Kia mentioned, by being pulled over by a police officer. I just thought this was very interesting. But he writes, or he states, "The next day I was in my car, driving along the freeway, when at a red light, another car pulled alongside. A white woman was driving, and on the passenger's side, next to me, was a white man. 'Malcolm X,' he called out, and when I looked, he stuck his hand out of his car, across at me, grinning. 'Do you mind shaking hands with a white man?' Imagine that, just as the traffic light turned green. I told him, 'I don't mind shaking hands with human beings. Are you one?'" So I wonder what this person would say on a radio station about having that comment being thrown at him. That's where we're trying to get to, right? Where we're seeing everyone as, like Martin Luther King Jr. says, the, you know, content of their character. And I understand, like I said, we weren't going to get into talking too much about the acronym DEI, but my statement is DEI never dies. DEI, not DIE.
Well said, Kimberly.
So, you know, he talks about this diversity, equity, and inclusivity. In general, it's where we are striving to be. But until we get there, when we're realizing there's a lack, we usually try to remediate the situation. And this way, having our government make protocols to allow for such an occasion to happen. And I just wanted to bring this up because it happened within the last couple of days. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is very anti-DEI. So that's another conversation on how to stay friends with people who you don't necessarily have the same political outlook with. But I try to do my best because like Malcolm, people are human and, you know, they are about their thoughts and actions. Though they speak louder than words, I would like to think that many people who have voted for this administration, who's doing destructive works with the progression of humanity in itself in the United States, I would hope that people would take time to reimagine the situation, and would they do the same thing if they knew everything that was happening? And I would like to hope or believe that they would think hard about that question and decide that they would make that change. But anyway, I think it's very important to highlight how people do make changes, because Malcolm X himself had not the same outlook in his beginning, in his youth, as he had when he was on his deathbed. His going to Africa, going to the Middle East, seeing how people of all different colors were welcomed and communicated effectively and quite gently with one another, that took him, made him become a different person. So we are all becoming, and that's why we are on this planet. So we're going to have this next segment in which Lakia talks, in fact, just about doing that thing, attending or finding more about herself and themselves as a family outside of the United States. Just a quick statement before we go into that. Did you want to, you were shaking your head about some of those things. Do you have anything you might want to in?
Absolutely. Thank you, Kimberly. I believe much of what you were discussing can be solved, probably more than 50% of it, clearing away all the distractions from any powers that be or any media out there. I particularly observe, and I encourage all listeners and everyone out there to observe things from a bird's eye view, turn the mirror on the audience. And honestly, speaking about mothers, there's many people, especially I'll just point out in the United States, that do underappreciate their mothers and have mothers who underappreciate them. And I think that's where it all starts with. I think as humans, if we observe how we're treating each other, regardless of ethnicity, just how people in general are treating each other, even within their own ethnicity, I believe that would solve, as I say, more than 50% of what is ongoing, what's being brought to attention, in the media here and there about dissension amongst ethnicities. And I think one of the only ways to solve dissension amongst ethnicities is just observe how people in everyday life, as I say, even within their own families and their own ethnicities, are treating each other. There's a lot of people out there who give their mother flowers on Mother's Day, but treat her like dirt all year round, where I was there for my mom right until the end. And we were, at the time, the only ones there for each other. And she had kidney disease. I was her full-time caregiver and there with her, holding her hand when she took her last breath. And had she lived on, it was not her wish nor mine to just dump her in a nursing home. And this culture that's developed where people are so focused on just daily uptight material wealth instead of treating each day as a celebration, treating each other as a human being as a celebration within your own ethnicity and outside of that. I think when that makes a turnaround, I think I'm quite sure the best of people will be golden. And as my mom predicted, along with many other things years ago, the rest who continue down the other path are only going to drag each other down with their own misery and negativity.
Well, I like that you mentioned wealth, because, again, when you think of Africa,
you don't
think of the wealthiest continent, right? Or many of the nations that make up the African continent. You don't think that that's where all the wealth is. And yet, that is exactly where all the wealth is. That's where all the land wealth is.
Absolutely.
And now you have, well, you've had countries, nations, all trying to get their peace, to try to leave it in ruin. And what
of course
kind of left is a population of people struggling to get a foothold on in this new world, or what people term the Western world. And they're, I think I don't know this for sure, because how would I? I really get a feeling that this next world for humanity will be where it started, and that is in this region. But enough of our blabbing. A lot of what we just talked about, though, is what my cousin Lakia found that transpired with her visit there. So let's do our segment three with our guest talker, Kia Walker.
Spot on, Kimberly. Thank you. Here we go.
That I feel strongly about, not even so much, I mean, about race, but I feel like the American culture itself, our kids are like spoiled.
Mm.
And they don't really value or appreciate the opportunities and experiences that they have here. And so my goal as a parent is to take all of my kids out of America and to bring them to another country, so that they can see and appreciate how blessed and how fortunate they are to live in this country. My oldest two have been, that already have been out of the country. My oldest son, he went to Guatemala without a parent.
Okay.
So he went to Guatemala, and then recently last year he went to Africa and he stayed for 3 months. And then my daughter and I,
where in Africa?
He was in Zambia. And then my daughter and I, while he was there, we got to go for 13 days. And we did missionary work, but I mean, it was just an eye opener especially for my daughter. We saw poverty like we've never seen it before. And the things that she learned is like, there is no social services. There is no Salvation Army. There is no free education until the 12th grade. Like, we went and visited schools, that we were in a village where there were about probably 600 people in an area. And they were only able to, they had a school from about kindergarten to sixth grade. And they were only able to educate like 200 to 300 kids. Mm. And the rest of them, you just don't go to school. And their rule is, if you don't have shoes and if you don't have a uniform, you can't come to school. And you only can go to school till the sixth grade. And then you have to pay for it. But they learn English in school. And
many of them, they also speak several dialects.
Right.
There.
Yeah. I mean, we met kids that they were like 6 years old and they knew like 8 languages.
Wow.
Like, that just blows your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then when we walked on like the street, I guess, I mean, people are walking with like we've seen this one kid that had, basically it was just the top part of the jean and the rest was like pretty much holes.
Oh, really?
And
that wasn't a fashion statement,
no.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
No.
Okay.
And then, like, he had one shoe on, and he only had one shoe. And, like, so...
But was happy, or not happy, but proud to have had something, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that was the big takeaway was, even in their, like, in their lack, no one complained. Mm-hmm. Like, no one complained about what they had. Like, they were... honored for us to come to their house, and they lived in like huts with dirt floors, and
it was just like there was such an honor and a respect. And then when we went to the schools, the kids wanted to be there. They wanted to learn. They wanted to hear about America. They want, and it was just like a whole different atmosphere of when you, and this is the point, and this is what I wanted my kids to see, when you, because you get to see like what you have and then what others really don't have.
I'm going to go away from Africa a little bit. Your children are probably going to live on their own, have their own family. Are you specifically interested in what ethnicity that your children decide to marry? If they want to marry someone from Africa, if they want to marry someone from Uruguay, I don't know where they're going to be going next. An Italian-American or Irish-American.
No, I don't care who they marry. My main thing for my kids is I want them to marry somebody first and foremost that love God. I want them, religion is important to me, so I definitely want them to marry somebody that...
Catholic? Hindu?
No. Christian.
Okay. So it doesn't matter what their ethnic identity is, but their religion.
Yes, religion, religion supersedes ethnicity for me. There's
all kinds. I mean, I think people don't recognize that there are black people who are Jewish, you know, black-skinned people who are every denomination and religious religious background in the world. Last thing I want to ask you about, and again, this is about being a mom. You seem happy.
I didn't expect to have four kids, but I would not change it. I think if I could give advice would be, like I said, I'm a balanced mom, and you have to work at being a balanced mom. I mean, as much as I love my kids, I still have to have a life. I think it's important to do the things that I like to do and to even get that time alone. You know, it's easier now that they're getting bigger, but they're, when they were smaller, like those moments were like precious and you didn't always get them all the time. And so I had to, like, for my house, like my kids knew when I was in the bathroom, don't knock on the door unless somebody's like dying or
that's my time.
Yeah. So there's times like I would just go in the bathroom and just be in there for like 10 minutes.
Oh,
and
that's like, it? That's it?
Yeah. Or if I was, even if I was taking a shower.
20, 30 minutes.
No, but even if I was taking a shower, like, don't knock on the door while I'm taking a shower. Just little things like that will help me out. And I figured out the things that I mean, I don't really like to do anything like extravagant, but the things that I like to do, I like drinking tea. I like watching Guess Who? That's like, you know, Guess Who, the movie with Bernie Mac. It makes me laugh or whatever, so I'll just, some nights, some days, I would just watch Guess Who and drink a cup of tea, and that's like, that's all I needed, you know? So
Mom, we have like a minute to go.
Okay.
So let me ask you, are you living your best life?
I am living my best life, but I know there's more to come.
Empty nest?
Yeah, we're approaching that. I want to be able to help them as much as I can keep them home. My kids are good at saving money. They, like my two oldest, they have money in the bank. Like they work and they save. Oh. And so like I'm not going to send them out in the world broke, you know? So I think that's important. They also, my oldest son, he has no student loan debt.
Whoa.
Which is big. My other daughter, she's getting ready to go to college. We write scholarship essays, you know, like
we write it.
So like
we, AI, you know.
So yeah. So content, no, creator. I think it's important. I don't want to just send them out just because they're a certain age. I want to help prepare them. I don't want to like smuggle them, but I want them to be prepared.
Well, I'm so thankful that you finally agreed to be on my show, even if it's taped. I'm not going to change. I don't know if everything that we say will get on air, but I'm not going to change anything that we say. But I do want to have you back.
Okay.
With the entire family.
Oh, okay.
I think that would be super cute.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you get to hear from the children. and a little bit from their perspective and see how much the change, you know, how much life has changed for them versus when you were in Catskill and their father was in Hudson growing up. So, okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Like I said, this Woo-hoo! Was an amazing time that I spent with my cousin. And I think I might have cut out the part where I stated that we grew up just, you know, the Hudson River apart. And we didn't really connect until we were both of age. And she was already, I think, a parent by then. So family. Like you were mentioning, you know, we need to really connect with our families more. And I just want to mention, since we are talking about Malcolm X and this being the centennial of his being born, that in conjunction with what my cousin just mentioned, he states, "I believe in recognizing every human being as a human being, neither white, black, brown, nor red. When you are dealing with humanity as one family, there's no question of integration or intermarriage. It's just one human being marrying another human being, or one human being living around and with another human being." Now, they called him radical. They called him a racist because during much of that time that he was in his formative years and sometime throughout, because before the Civil Rights Movement, it was radical to have a statement like that because the laws were on the books where you couldn't intermingle.
Yes.
You couldn't even sit on the same toilet in some people's homes. You certainly couldn't drink from the same water fountains, which were totally ridiculous since you were having black women have white babies suckle at their bosom. So, excuse me. They can drink your a black woman's milk from her tit, but they cannot. But that black woman then cannot turn around and sit on a toilet. So we've come far from
excellent point.
Yeah, we've come far from those time periods. But again, he went from being considered a radical and a racist to really coming into his own, coming into where Malcolm. I mean, I keep getting their names mixed up. Martin Luther King Jr. says, you know, that mountaintop. So there's a lot of positivity when I think of Malcolm X. And so all the kudos he's going to get coming, and like people are naming schools after him, they're naming streets after him. I think it's a good thing. I think we should remember how people have become and not where they were in some point in their lives. I also want to mention, and I want to thank my cousin again for coming and spending time at my home and having that interview, that she was talking about reserving some time for oneself as a parent, that you have to do that because mental and emotional health is important for growth. And this is a time period that it's crazy out here. It's almost like we're going back, MAGA, right?
I'm sure Malcolm X would be asking a few people out there if they are human, like he did with the person who said, "Will you shake hands with a white man?" Because sometimes there's behavior out there that's more extraterrestrial. And that's a discussion I've had with my lovely, lovely distant but yet very close DNA cousin in Wisbech, Cambridgeshire, England. Her name is Rachel Conroy, now that she's been married for several years, and is a mother to almost a two-year-old now, I believe, named Anastasia, because we met as DNA cousins through a project with Johannes Frebel Parker, a.k.a. John Parker. We can talk about that more. It's been mentioned on my show and podcast several times, but in the future. But go Rachel, cousin Rachel, our connection is through Ireland with the DNA, but she's also part Jamaican background. And she told me something recently that I believe I heard, and I'm sure Malcolm X would be intrigued by this and probably had this knowledge as well, Kimberly, that I believe I heard along the way when I was a child or something that the manner in which black people would braid their hair before it was for fashion, it was actually a strategy that was they would map out in their hair escape routes to communicate with each other to escape from the plantations. And that's pretty much been written out of history. Have you heard that one yet?
Right here from you. I think there's going to be a lot of people running to Google it. Well, thanks for
indeed.
And you know
Thank
what?
You, that, Cousin Rachel.
Those are stories that people who do a deep dive into culture recognition would find. And like Kia said in one of the segments, you know, she wasn't well versed in African American cultural heritage. And one of the reasons is because many black people coming out of being enslaved, they didn't want to remember that. You know, that's what I'm talking about when I talk about mental health. So I just want to make sure everyone understands that mental health, of course, is part of our everyday existence. If you have a brain, then you become mental and you want your brain and your thoughts to be healthy. So don't let what's happening, and I know the people who are listening to me, you're the choir with the Trump administration, make you less mentally sound. Grab another person that you can use as support. Talk to people about what's going on. Do what you can do to support what your belief is. If it's marching, march. If it's talking on the radio, talk on the radio. If it's talking to a neighbor, stop and enjoy an extra 1 or 2 minutes to talk to that neighbor about what's going on. Make sure you get it out of your soul and your psyche. We don't have much time, and I do want to play this Asian American Pacific Islander heritage person's song. But I also wanted to just bring up a subject about mental health that's personal. I've had two uncles, and I said I've had because both have passed on, who were for many years of their lives, most of their lives actually, dealing with mental illness. And I wanted to read, they were people called them Butch and Peter, but it's Marin Lee Irwin, and who wrote this book, who wrote many poems. And I wanted to read one of the poems for you, because this is how he dealt with his health, trying to be healthy with his mind. He wrote, and in his book, 3 minutes, it's Black Arts. My soul is burning because of the soul food that was put on my table. Day after day, my soul is burning because of the black boys and girls I grew up with, played with, and shared dreams with. My soul is burning because of what I witnessed in these black churches, people crying because they had the spirit of the Lord in them. They sang sweet songs like Come Home to Jesus and Swing Low Sweet Chariot and other songs that make all the church members and visitors and the strong black preachers feel good. My soul is burning for the black people that I associated with throughout my early years in the inner city. My soul is burning because I wanted to be somebody and get off the corners of the streets where we did a lot of dreaming to be Hollywood stars. My soul is burning because as teenagers we were stars, but we didn't know it. My soul is burning because I wanted to fly like Superman until Superman jumped off a tall building and killed himself. My soul is burning because I wanted to be like my dad and make money, and I did. My soul is burning because everything good was white, and I wanted to be good and white. So I put white string in my nappy hair and shook my head back and forth. My soul is burning because I really was glad to be black when I saw in person Johnny Sample, the great football player in the Baltimore Colts. My soul is burning because I saw many times in person James, please, 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 Brown. My soul is burning because a movie was being shot in a town that I spent part of my life in, and it was called Odds Against Tomorrow, starring Harry Belafonte, a black and famous actor and singer, and he was a good image for me. My soul is burning because I was getting older, and I wanted to be like Wilt Chamberlain, the famous professional basketball player. My soul is burning because I was introduced to not only black music, but also to black artists in the music industry. People like Jackie Wilson, Fats Domino, Nat King Cole, Sarah Vaughan, Marian Anderson, The Temptations. The list of singers was long. My soul is burning because of the first book by a black man I read, Manchild is the Promised Land, by the distinguished writer Claude Brown. But I found out later he was only one of many black writers such as County Cullen, James Weldon Johnson, Langston Hughes, Phillips Wheatley, T.A. Rogers, Gene Toomer, James Baldwin, Richard Wright, Frank Yerby, John Oliver Killens, Louise Merriweather, Maya Angelou, Nikki Giovanni, Quincy Troup, Askia Muhammad Torre, Don L. Lee, Mars Hill. The list goes on and on. My soul is burning.